All right, we just shot our promo video for our grand spanking brand new book that we're excited to talk about. And I said it wrong. I said we're coming after the children, and that's wrong. We're not coming after
We're not coming after the children. We've created something along with Jenny Maisel's that will appeal to children, but we're not coming after the children. That's just wrong on a many, many levels.
Many, many levels. What we want to do is get them while they're young. You know,
Again, think before you speak.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 542, Writing Pop-Up Shakespeare. Yes, if you haven't heard, we're so excited to talk about the thing that we have created with Jenny Maisel's, a beautifully illustrated pop-up book called Pop-Up Shakespeare.
And what's the topic?
The topic is pops.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Like Shakespeare's father.
Shakespeare's father, the carbonated soda water that he drank.
Okay, I see. Yeah.
And how it got him so up and high and flying on the sugar.
Okay, that's weird, because I would think it would be like a sort of a children's pop-up book about William Shakespeare's life and all of his works.
I could see why you would think that. Yeah. That makes all the sense in the world, actually, now that I think about it. Yes, Jenny came to us as you heard on last week's podcast. Jenny reached out to me via Twitter and said, "I've got a weird idea." No, she said, I've got a crazy idea. Can I email you? I promise I'm not a weirdo."
And that was a long time ago. That was it 3 years ago?
It was at least 3 or 4 years ago. It was when we were doing comedy. You were writing comedy in my basement with me.
Yeah, I flew out to Illinois, and Austin and I were at his house writing, and we took a break in the writing one day and did a Skype call with Jenny. Yeah, I guess it must have been 3 years ago?
Four years ago. It's been through several incarnations, and we talked about it a little bit with Jenny, but you and I can talk about it more, about its development a little bit. Although from the time she had the initial idea to you and I agreeing to do it, I think maybe 20 minutes had passed. I mean, she tweeted me. I went, "Of course." She got back to me with a proposal, and I said to you, and you said, "What, are we idiots? Yes, why not? Yes, of course we would do this." And then we talked, but it's just a time-consuming process.
Well, yeah, part of it was, I know we went back and forth a lot about how many, what do they call them, spreads?
Yeah.
Like how many pages that open up, how many would there be, and what would they be? And I think the number changed, and I think what they covered changed over time. And then I think it came to a nice sort of sensible conclusion about what each of the spreads should be, but it took a while to get there.
Well, and it seems silly that it would take a while, because we've divided the spreads up as it makes sense to me. There are, you know, there's three categories of plays. There's comedies, tragedies, histories. But we also wanted to talk about his life and his world, and so the first spread talks about his world, which is the Stratford where he grew up, and London where, of course, he did all of his work.
And his family talks about his mother and his father and his wife and children. Yeah, so that's the first spread.
And what we know about him. And then it goes on to the comedies, histories, and tragedies. And then we added a spread called the romances, which are those late comedies like The Tempest and Winter's Tale that deal with magic and are a little harder to categorize than just the comedies.
As well as the poetry.
Yeah.
Not all of which is romantic, but much of it is.
Right. And then the final spread is the tragedy. So that's five spreads, but there was talk earlier that it would be six.
And I guess that's more the standard number, which I wasn't aware.
Well, I think the economics of this have pop-up books have changed a little bit. You know, six, they wanted a price point of around $15-16 in pounds. I think, a sixth spread would have made it more expensive for the buyer, and that's not that. And price point is a term that a term of art that I came to know.
How much are you charging?
How much is it going to cost people? Well, and I think also there are more expensive pop-up books out there that are genuine works of art, but they're like $25-30, and they're more expensive. And very much the goal of this was to get this into the hands of families.
Yeah, I've always loved pop-up books. I think you love them even more than I do. Mm-hmm. It seems like this one, and correct me if I'm wrong, my sense is this has a little considerably more text than a lot of pop-up books. Does it seem that way to you?
I think that is true, with the exception of you know, gift pop-up books that are editions of Alice in Wonderland or The Wizard of Oz or something, both of which I have, where they have the whole text, but the text is crowded around on panels or whatever. This text just seems to be very much part of... It's not set off to the side in flaps. It's very much part of the things of the pop-ups. And, you know, it's really... you can't see this, and maybe I should post some video of it, but you know, if you lift pages to find out, you know, where did Willie go in those years where we don't know much about him, or what does he look like in Shakespeare's grave? You can lift the flap and find out what he looks like
with the missing skull.
That's right. Spoiler: he doesn't look great.
No, he does not.
And the Globe Theater pops up in a very cool way, and you can turn it around and look on the back of it. This seems like a very... Well, obviously, this is how you would organize it. But I remember at one point we were saying, well, what if we organized it... Because I was thinking visually. Well, what if we organize it like one pop-up is a ship?
Mm-hmm.
Because... And then we'll talk about all the plays that have ships in them.
Right. And then one pop-up would be a forest.
Right, yes.
The trouble we found was all those plays don't sort of... necessarily fit together very well. Yeah. And also there's overlap. Some plays have ships and forests, and then where do you put them?
Right, then where do you put them? And we thought, oh, and all the plays that take place in castles. But as it happens, you know, she was still able to do pop-ups of ships. Her Tempest pop-up is, Jenny's Tempest pop-up is extraordinary. What was amazing to me, I don't know why this is amazing, but Jenny's flair for what the central image of each play was is really great.
Yeah, she nailed all those. It was wonderful.
And then, you know, there were a handful of times where we were, you know, all of us were kind of scratching our heads. Well, what is the central image of Two Gentlemen of Verona, you know?
And then it turns there's a picture of these two guys from Verona. It's really weird.
Yeah, it is very weird. And so you could see how we sort of cheated on that one. There's about two or three panels for Two Gentlemen of Verona. That's how much of attention we've given to Two Gentlemen of Verona. Do you remember having to do much research for this as we were writing it?
A lot of this work we did when we wrote our Orange book. Yeah. Condensations, you know, sort of short, pithy descriptions of the plays. I think the toughest thing was then to simplify it even more and shorten it even more. Because our Orange book was not intended for young audiences. I think this book is intended... honestly, for all audiences.
Right.
I think kids will love it. I think kids will get turned on to Shakespeare by reading it.
Mm-hmm.
But Shakespeare fans are going to enjoy it, too. Adults will enjoy it. So for me, yeah, the tricky thing was, how can we say this a little more simply, a little more clearly? Certain things happen in some of the plays that the publisher was saying, well, we really don't want to say that if it's targeted for kids.
What's the child-friendly way to talk about incest?
Yeah. The Rape of Lucrece.
Yes.
Yeah. And so there was a little bit of that, but mostly it was just, and it's good writing practice.
Yeah.
How do we say this simply and clearly? That was the challenge, and it was fun.
Simply and clearly, and in an entertaining way. So So though it's definitely for families. It wanted to be child friendly as well, because I do remember from looking at pop up books when I was a kid. You know, as a kid you appreciate it on one level, and then as you get older you begin to appreciate it on different levels. You begin to understand what's really being said. For instance, in the description of Measure for Measure, where people are doing very naughty things indeed.
Yes.
You know, and that's about as dirty as it gets.
Do you have a favorite bit of text or a favorite illustration in the book?
Yes, I think my favorite bit of text, honestly, is our description of Coriolanus.
Would you care to read some of that?
Yes, I will read it, because I was trying to imagine, you know, when families get this, parents might read this to their children.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought that this would be fun for a parent to read. Coriolanus. Like Julius Caesar, Coriolanus is based on a real person. Coriolanus was an ancient Roman general who, in the play at least, is pretty great on the battlefield, but pretty terrible at politics. Coriolanus is helped by his iron-willed mother, Volumnia, and the Roman Senate, but because he has no people skills, Coriolanus is not liked by the citizens of Rome. In a weird coincidence, Coriolanus is not liked by audiences either. Coriolanus ends up dead, which no one is that sad about. The best part of Coriolanus is getting to say Coriolanus, because the last two syllables are naughty.
Yes. And then for each of the plays, we have a very succinct encapsulation called Long Story Short.
Yeah.
And the long story short for Coriolanus just says, Coriolanus.
Because at heart, we're seven.
Potty jokes!
Hi, this is Ellen Margolis, Chair of Theater and Dance at Pacific University in Oregon, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSE? This week, you can continue to see us perform William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged in both the U.S. and the U.K. The RSE U.K. performs this week in Torquay, Hartford, Bedford, and then next week until the end of May in Oxford, Stroud, Thornbury, Milton Keynes, Stoke-on-Trent, Porthcawl, Worcester, York, Eastbourne, Woking, Derby, Folkestone, and Bromley. And in the U.S., we'll perform long-lost shakes this Friday night in Flint, Michigan, then next week in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and then for three nights at the end of May at the Virginia Arts Festival in Norfolk, Virginia. We also have some very exciting summer plans for 2017, as well as new dates in several countries for this fall, and we're returning to two of our favorite theaters next year in 2018. We'll be able to share all of those dates in the upcoming weeks. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to Reed Martin and I talking about the process of writing pop-up Shakespeare.
I think my favorite bit of text is we had to say something to wrap up the tragedies or to introduce the tragedies. And I think the text says, tragically, a lot of tragic things happen in the tragedies or something like that.
Which I think scholars will find that hard to dispute.
Yes, I think it's absolutely correct.
Well, and speaking of scholars, we asked our friend Professor Peter Holland from the University of Notre Dame to once again take a pass through the book and correct any of our most egregious errors.
He's our favorite vetter. Fortunately, we don't have to watch him rolling his eyes as he... We do this via email, so it gives him time to sort of calm down, very politely give us the notes that it'd be fun to video him reading it. Oh, God.
That would be a great video. I might just have to drive over to Notre Dame and shoot that video and look at all the copies of our books he's thrown against the walls in frustration.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite visual thing that Jenny has created?
Oh, the whole thing is great. I do like, what she came up for, the tempest, the lightning and the wind and the waves crashing and the ship's sails all ripped. That's absolutely beautiful.
And with Prospero and Miranda hiding on the island. There's also bits of dialogue from all the plays as well. Sorry, continue.
Yeah, no, that's good. I love, she came up with like a skull. With a jester hat on it, tears of laughter.
Yeah.
It's just talking about the tragedies aren't all doom and gloom, that Shakespeare put comic characters in there as well. Mm-hmm. But that's just a beautiful little illustration.
I've never seen Yorick depicted that way. But it is a great, if only they picked up the skull and he's still got his jester's hat on.
And then they know that's the funny part. Here comes the funny part, folks. But there's just so many, just the detail, it absolutely beautiful. It's just absolutely great.
I mean, we are so happy to be along for the ride because nobody's going to buy this pop-up book initially because we wrote any words to it. They're going to look at it and go, oh, I want that.
Yeah.
And then hopefully they'll go, hey, this is not badly written.
No, it is. It's great.
So, there's a portrait of William Shakespeare with, you know, in his bald head. And, of course, the dialogue balloon says, there's many a man has more hair than wit.
Of course.
As Reed knows personally. But then you lift open the flap, and there's a flap on the left side about Shakespeare's mom and dad. And then there's a question about, well, where's Willie, talking about his missing years.
Yeah, this is a very good text. No evidence has been found to show where he was or what he was doing between 1585 and 1592. That's 7 years. Yes, he was a master playwright and a poetic genius. Father of the year? Doesn't look like it. Yeah. I also love, Jenny did an illustration of, it shows Shakespeare's parents and the young William Shakespeare, and the baby William Shakespeare is also bald and has the little beard. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of great notes. I mean, there are times where I've lifted up the flap and laughed out loud.
Yes. Great illustration. Shakespeare's birthplace.
Yeah.
It's probably much nicer now than in 1552 when Shakespeare's father was fined for leaving a pile of dung outside. And then there's just a little pile of dung at the bottom of that illustration.
This is why she has trained so hard and works for so many years as being such a beautiful illustrator. She's drawn a pile of poop to go in a children's book.
We've ruined her career.
Well, and I'm not sure we finished the story about why it took so long. Mm. You know, then we were going to go to a different...
Two different... Did we end up with our third?
No, I think we ended up with our first... second.
Okay.
Because what happened was is that we went to initially to a publisher that... Jenny's worked with several publishers, and we went to the first one, and they were in the... They went, great, yes. And I went over to London and had a meeting with them, and it was great. And that's where I first began to see the physical idea of this book take shape. And... but then that publisher merged with a different publisher, and so things got suddenly we were getting lost in the shuffle.
And then nothing was happening. We thought, oh, this has fallen through, and it's not infrequent that things do fall through. I remember why I thought it was a third publisher, because our editor got switched. So we ended up with a second publisher.
That's right.
And we were working with one editor who was great, and then things changed, and we worked with a new... So we were very fortunate. We had two great editors that
That's right.
With.
And Daisy Jellicoe was the editor of record at Walker Books, and I'm going to be talking to her on next week's podcast about what it's like from her standpoint. What was interesting about... I think both Daisy and Jenny have talked about this, that a pop-up book is very theatrical. You know, and that's what, that hadn't occurred to me, but of course it is. I mean, there's, you talk about theater being an interactive medium or whatever, computer games being interactive, but books, you know, you create the book off the words of the page, and in this, you actually, you know, lift the flaps up and build the Globe Theater, you know, you can...
And there's a video game element of it to me, because unlike a regular book, the way I go about a pop-up book is I don't sit there and read everything from, you know, linearly from beginning to end. I go, and I open a few flaps, and I go to the next one, and so I'm going out of order, and that works fine. I make my own journey through the pop-up book, and that's...
Well, I did a podcast that was posted last week, with Hal Lublin and Mark Gagliardi. We got this podcast, and they reached out to me because they were doing they take questions from their listeners and say, well, what's the answer to this? You know, unresolvable questions, rhetorical questions, but Hal and Mark sit down and they actually, say, this is the answer. So there were
like what, chicken and egg, that kind of thing?
Probably, yeah. So their question was, well, what is Shakespeare's greatest play? Oh. And so they had me participate in this conversation, and it's an hour-long conversation. It's very interesting. I urge you all to listen to it, but because I think the conclusion will surprise you.
Henry VIII.
It won't surprise you that much. Oh. But I had this at my side as we were recording, and it was a kind of a very interesting, quick reference. You know, I was able to look at stuff. What have I forgotten? Mm-hmm. You know, I hope in that sense that the pop-up Shakespeare, is as useful as it is fun and entertaining. That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Pop-Up Shakespeare by Jenny Mazels and me and Reed will be published first in Australia on September 1st, 2017 by Walker Books Australia, then in the UK on September 7th by Walker Books UK, and here in the US bringing up the rear on October 3rd by Candlewick Press. You can pre-order it now at Amazon or your local bookshop. Then send us your favorite bit of text via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. You can follow me on Twitter @AustinTichner. You can follow Reed @ReedOfRSC. And you can follow Jenny on both Twitter and Instagram @JennyMazels. And actually, the RSC is now on Instagram too, @ReducedShakespeareCompany. Thanks as always to Author of the Year Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and GarageBand. A random fan shout out this week goes to Jim Radloff. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Professor Ellen Margolis, Chair of Theater and Dance here at Pacific University in Oregon, where I have spent the most amazing 4 months. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 542 1626th of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. I haven't said this to Jenny yet, but I'm kind of hoping, I hope she comes up with another idea that we can work with her on.
That would be awesome.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.